Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 446. I'm Lisa Sheps. I'm joined today by Nick Mayo.
Hello.
You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. We are also streaming this at KOOP.org. It is 2018, y'all. Stick with us and we'll be right back.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up.
It is Wednesday, January 3rd, 2018. Oy vey's mir. On the show today, we have different stages in their production of When We Are Married, and also later on we'll be talking to Austin Playhouse in their production of The Immigrant, and of course, we'll have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Detroit, Ann Arbor, London, Scotland, and Wales. Stick around.
Is to write something that gets shot with approximately the plot.
Wah, 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 wah. Wah, 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 wah. Do you know what the show that's from?
Sunset Boulevard. Love
Sunset
it.
Sunset Boulevard, which I have never seen. And here's the kicker. Never seen the movie.
Oh, Lisa.
No, I'm terrible.
Maybe this year will be a better year for
you. I'm terrible. I have to say, I wish that Nicole Shearer were here, because we've got this new sound set up, and I permanently put this in. Oh, you can't hear that because your headphones are on.
No, I hear it. I hear it. I hear it. I hear it. It's the Law and Order one.
I have. So whenever I want to, I can just have that go.
I also want to show off, because you would never do this for yourself. Guys, Lisa's got this little mouse thing that she did. She just did a cue on the board without even touching the board.
Trying to go a little 21st century. Yeah. No longer will I make CDs, because then I just throw them away.
Yeah, or mixtapes.
So I still do mixtapes. Well, checking in with Nick Mayo. You haven't been here with
Hello.
Us for a while. You've been very, very busy.
Yes.
Yeah, you were Summer Stock Austining last week.
Yes, last week we had our first round of auditions for Summer Stock Austin.
So that's what, you know, I told that to the listeners. You know, people, it's like wintertime here, but we're starting to work already on summer, and that's the way theater does.
That is the way theater does.
Yeah, so there you go. So how is your celebration?
We had a nice new year, very quiet and relaxing. What about you?
You know what? I would have said the same, except I was dog sitting for a dog. I went to sleep at around 10, and the dog started barking at 11:30.
He was excited.
And did not stop.
Oh, no.
Ever. I believe the dog is still barking.
Oh, no.
I know.
On Christmas Day, though, I did, or not Christmas Day, New Year's Eve day, I did see the Christmas Story tour that came through.
Oh, you did see it.
Which is a really great way.
So, you know, they were on the show last week.
Oh, yeah, yes.
So we had the guy that played the father.
The narrator. The narrator. Oh, they were lovely.
Yeah. Did you enjoy it?
I did. I really enjoyed it. You know,
well, now, do you like the show? You know what? Hold on to that thought. Yeah, I want to bring the rest of our guests in here, because that, you know, other people might have opinions. Because he stepped away from the microphone, he said he agreed. So here with us in the studio, and this will be a mic test to see if this microphone works, is Norman Blumensaat.
Hi, Lisa.
It does not work.
It doesn't work.
No, so you're going to have to share a microphone with other folks there. Don't know why it's not working.
Hi, Lisa.
There you go. Yeah. Hello. And then Shona Smith. Hi.
Hi, Lisa.
And Derek Webster.
Hi, Lisa.
Hello, hello. Okay, so first of all, Christmas Story. Anybody?
Well, like you and Sunset Boulevard, I've never seen the movie. Didn't see the show.
Me either. I've tried to see the movie. I can't sit through it.
Yeah, I think it's an acquired taste, but I like the movie, and I, I was surprised that I enjoyed the show.
Shona, what about you? Do you know the movie?
A Christmas Story?
Yes.
With a little boy?
Yes.
Yeah, I've seen it once on a plane.
Oh, you saw it once on a plane. Okay.
Yeah, I thought it was cute.
That's good.
Yeah.
And did anybody see the, you know, we spoke about it a little bit last week, so we can't go into detail, but they did the live version on Fox. Did you see that? Did you happen to catch any of that with Matthew Broderick? And
yeah, I did. It made me a little dizzy. I thought they did a great job.
Oh, we did talk about it.
Yeah, we talked about it. It was a bit of a feat, but it gave me a little bit of dizziness.
Yeah. Dizzy.
But I love the show that they did. I thought that, you know.
Tell us. So what did you love about it?
You know, I think it was that it was post-holidays to see families in the audience. I thought that the director did a great job. Usually and this is a little bit of education. Usually when you go and set a national tour, you set the show that was done on Broadway. And they'll hire a director to come and set a tour. In this specific case, the Broadway director is a director named John Rando, gave permission for this director, whose name is Matt Lenz, to reset and have full creative control. So it was it had a freshness to it that... I didn't really feel.
Now, did you have a connection with anybody involved?
Yeah, Matt's a friend.
Okay,
so
cool.
he came in town, and it was the last day of the tour.
Well, that's hot. It was the last day of the tour, the last stop, the furthest west they went on this tour.
And it's strange timing, right? Post holidays to see a holiday show like A Christmas Story, but I enjoyed it. I had a great time. And you know, the kids on stage and dogs on stage are both questionable for me, and I enjoyed both aspects.
Well, this is a good thing because this is a non-equity tour.
It was a non-equity
tour.
So
it's always nice to, I love my equity tours.
Uh-huh.
And if you were to like parse it all out, the non-equity tours typically are not as good,
mm-hmm.
but it's nice. Like the non-equity tour of Memphis that went out was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's always nice when we know that there are non-equity tours out there that are doing really good work.
I agree. And also a tour that doesn't limp to its death. Because when you see the last show of a tour, sometimes you can already sense the cigarette smoke as they're walking out the door and lighting up.
Except this one might be a little different in that they do this every year. A lot of the people come back each year. Mm-hmm. This is the fourth year, and it's a very limited run. So it's not
true.
That doesn't really have time to get.
That's too
a good old.
Point. That's true.
But that's great. I'm glad. Yeah. I'm glad that you enjoyed it.
So
Hamilton, have you heard of that show?
Never.
Just announced a whole bunch of
their tours.
Tour dates.
Yeah.
The tours. They've got the multiple tours going out, so they didn't really say what tour is what. So there are 41 cities on this tour. Guess where Austin, and they're in chronological order. So guess where out of 41, which is Austin? How
Seven.
Far down the line? Seven. Anybody else? Any guesses?
25.
Three.
Three. Shona's going like, I don't even want to try. Try 17.
17?
Shona's right.
No, 17.
17 out of 41, which is really good. We are getting Hamilton before San Antonio, which I think is quite a coup.
That is pretty great.
We are not getting it before Houston, though.
Well,
Houston is getting it this season. We're getting it next season.
It's exciting. I also love the fact that there are so many stops on that tour, because as we know, everyone wants to see it. So what a great opportunity.
So I'll go through a few of them. I'm not going to read the whole list. San Diego, which is where it is now. It left Los Angeles, now in San Diego. Tempe, Seattle, Denver, Portland, St. Louis, Salt Lake City, Houston? Never heard of it. Costa Mesa, Atlanta, Las Vegas, Washington, D.C., Washington, A.C., Washington, over the sea.
Washington, B.C.
Des Moines, Iowa.
Des Moines.
Cleveland, Ohio, Boston, Massachusetts, Charlotte, North Carolina, Austin, Texas, Buffalo, New York, etc., etc., etc. Okay, extra credit if you can tell me what show that's from.
Gang and I.
No, it's not. Okay.
Little Mary Sunshine?
Yeah, that's it. So interesting, we talked last week about Hamilton having opened on the West End. And we talk a lot about ticket scalpers and what that does and how the producers are trying to fight these secondhand ticket sellers. And in London, they have gone completely paperless tickets. Mm-hmm. And so they have found that to be a really good way of combating the scammers. So let me ask you guys this. Can we do that here or in New York?
So what the ticket is on your iPhone?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So you have to come in. It's not necessarily on your iPhone. You have to come in with ID and the credit card you purchased it with. You have to come in with those physical things to get in. So it's illegal in New York. You have to have paper, an option of paper in New York City.
Yeah, I don't think we're there yet.
Well, it's interesting. I was like all over this paperless thing, and then I started thinking about how I get a couple of tickets and I can't go and I want to give them to Nick. It's not going to be that easy if Nick has to show my ID and my credit card.
Or house seats and all of that.
It
can become a little... I think it's something that would be great to work towards. And what a great example to learn from another community that does something.
But the problem...
You don't know how many emails and phone calls it took. The year that I bought tickets for Kate Blanchett doing Uncle Vanya in New York, and I realized that it was playing the week before I went to New York, and I had bought these very expensive theater tickets. I found someone to buy them, but I had lots of phone conversations with people at Lincoln Center, or I guess wherever it was playing, to make sure that this person could come and pick up my ticket, which I had sold to him at the box office. Yes, you know, because I had to forward him all of my emails. So that he had something. Yeah.
But in a lot of ways, that is one of the reasons why we're having ticket prices that are so high that are aftermarket is because of the whole idea of the aftermarket sellers.
Well, then it becomes retrading. Which problem is more of a headache that we want to invest in? The headache of these increased ticket prices that are making it impossible for the majority of our country and the majority of the patrons to see it? Or it's just really then becomes like, which headache do we want to go into?
True.
But we have to choose one, and we should choose one, and we should address the problem and come at it from a proactive, let's fix it and learn from what the UK is doing and see if we can implement any of it.
Interestingly enough, the 2016-2017 highest grossing season ever in history. And a lot of that is because the median ticket price is over $100. And then you have these premium seatings, which is what I have a problem with, that are going for $1,000+. But on the other side, it's also been record-setting in terms of butts and seats. So it's all really good.
It is. I was about to say they're luxury problems, but they're not. They're not luxury problems, and I do think we need to address the larger problem, which is affordability.
I agree. And the hard part is you have shows like Hamilton and others that make a limited number available, but the Broadway has become a tourist destination versus a place where a lot of locals saw. One of the interesting statistics in one of the articles that I just read was that in the 60s and 70s, 70% of the shows were straight plays and 30% were musicals. Now it's exactly the opposite because straight plays can't win. Did anybody read the article about straight plays in New York? How New York is no longer a destination for up-and-coming playwrights?
I don't think it's a destination an awful lot of times for new work. I think it's a destination for work that has been done someplace else, either off-Broadway, a regional theater, and any place but Broadway. It has to have a proven financial track record.
But that's relatively new.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate, I think.
I will say the more on the yes, and that, and I think that we are hopefully trying to take a step out of that and embrace new works like Dear Evan Hansen, like Hamilton, here's the tricky thing.
Well, but again,
like,
these are musicals.
These are musicals.
So specifically what this one article...
And both of them were done other places first.
Well, always, but that's not a new thing.
That's not new.
That's where
Does It Play in Peoria came from.
Yeah.
I'm serious. We always tried out things prior to coming in. This article is interesting about talking about playwrights like Paula Vogel and Susan Laurie Parks and all these people. The Pulitzer Prize-winning playwrights are no longer looking to Broadway as the place that they want to end, even though that's where they do. And when they do get there, they last a very short time.
Yeah. And
less than 150 performances, typically.
I'm speaking to myself when I say this, more than anyone. But I think it's also important for what you just said is to also draw. I mean, it's our responsibility, right, as people who have a platform of media in a way to present both of sides. So we do have plays like Indecent that are new plays. We do have plays like Sweat that are coming in. So I see both. I see that we are running at a deficit, and I hope that we continue in the fashion of creating more place for more work like Sweat,
right?
Like Indecent.
No, the work is good.
The work is so good.
When you take shows like Humans, which is going out on a tour right now, and it won best. It didn't last very long on the street. Mm-hmm. So what you're getting for plays is typically the now four nonprofits that have houses on Broadway. That come in with a straight play on a limited run, mm-hmm. Maybe a 3-month run, mm-hmm. just limited, versus a play that comes in to a Nederlander or a Jujamson, mm-hmm. or a Schubert house for an open end run, yeah. that will end up closing early, like Doll's House Part 2. Incredible notices didn't last. As soon as the stars left, it was over.
Totally. I completely agree with you. Speaking of what you said with the humans, I think it's also, I want my 2018 wish and beyond for it to be, for instance, like the humans set a really amazing tour with a great
yes.
cast.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go to see it in Dallas. I'd love for you to come.
I'm there.
I am desperate. I can't wait to see this show. I hope for more plays, more national tours of plays set by their original directors with a really mindful eye towards casting, because we want them in the regions as well.
And it's so hard, though. It's so hard to get audiences, and that's the problem.
I know. I know.
I mean, Norman, what do you think about that? I mean, your company, Different Stages,
it's hard to get
typically
audiences
does straight plays.
In Austin, Texas. It's hard to get audiences.
Right. It's hard to get audiences. And it'll be interesting to see how Curious Incident does when they come
yes.
here. But I'll tell you, when you can't sell things like Fun Home, which came through, and they didn't get good houses, and that's an incredible musical.
Mm-hmm.
So, excellent discussion.
Good discussion.
Yeah, but there's an awful lot of things the first, second, third, fourth, fifth time around, people don't know about them. You know, it takes some shows, you know, it takes flops like Carmen and Madame Butterfly to be flops, and then finally people to come around to them. So
But it didn't used to be that way with straight plays back in the day.
No, but I think it's true. I think it's true. It's true of shows something like Fun Home, which is out of the mainstream.
Right, correct.
So
as we bring things that are maybe, to use your language, mainstream into the public eye, I think it's our responsibility to speak about them, talk about them, and make sure that our listeners and friends and family and community all goes out and supports them. And
I speak to
myself in that, and more than anyone.
And we also need to go out and support our local theaters, mm-hmm. Doing not only plays that have been done before, but also some of the new work that's out there, and go out and take a chance, see something that's just been written,
yeah.
A new piece that somebody is like...
Or an old piece you've never heard of.
Well, an old piece, right. Well, that, exactly. And that's actually one of the things that we're going to talk a little later, or not even, we can even discuss it now, but Different Stages does that all the time. And we were talking today before we went on the air. You know, I have known about Different Stages for 15 years, but I even had a misconception about them before today, right, Norman?
Yes, you did.
So I thought... Because typically you do classics, or a lot of times you do classics, but
well,
you don't.
Half the time we do classics, yeah. half the time. Aunt Dan and Lemon, Cloud Nine, The Language Archive.
Cloud Nine should be a classic.
Off the top of my head, I can't think of other things. Those were yeah. all Austin premieres.
Right.
You know, So
these are the things that we need our audience, our local audience, to go see.
But Austin premieres, you know, in a large house of 60 to 100.
Exactly, mm-hmm. exactly. Well, we need that to all change, and I think that we need to support more straight plays. It's very easy to go see musicals, mm-hmm. And I love musicals. I'm not dissing them at all, but we also need yep. to go see. And I'm as guilty as others. So speaking of Dear Evan Hansen, I just saw this article today. I had no idea. So Dear Evan Hansen, if you're not familiar with the play, it starts out with the main character having a cast on his arm. So did you know that that's a real cast every night? Mm-hmm. They put a real cast on, as if it's not a fake cast that's got like hinged. They put a real cast on, and then they cut it off every night.
I didn't know that.
I did not either. So there's this, what's this article? There'll be a link at offstageonair.com. This is in Playbill. But let's see, they have the number of the ones that they've done here. And of course, I didn't... But anyway, it's a fiberglass cast that they do at half hour. And then at intermission, they saw it off every night.
Huh.
And they
They don't do this on stage where someone could actually get hurt. Okay.
Good. No. And you you don't see it. I didn't. You know, I saw the play. I would not have known that it was. Never in a million years would I have thought it would be an actual cast that they put
you're
on.
You're looking for the Velcro.
But they do. Yeah.
That's interesting.
It's. I guess that's because Ben Platt is a method actor. So he actually broke his arm every day.
Ridiculous.
I can't find the number of how many it does. Somewhere in here had the number. But there's a picture of casts that are sitting on his wall.
That's so funny.
I thought that was interesting. There's also another interesting article that I have to say I did not understand. Because I'm not smart. But it's talking about dehumanization of live theater, or a dehumanization in today's digital age, and why live theater is important to maintain the real lifeness of it, because there's no other way to do theater except with real people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this is written by Ayad Akhtar,
Pulitzer
Prize winning playwright.
I'm going to steal that when we're done. I want to read that.
Yeah, and I'll just give it to you right now, because we're not going to really talk about it, because I realized after I was reading it that it was too intelligent for me.
Well, but I also love that it's written by a playwright.
You know that his father forced him to read the Wall Street Journal.
I did not know that.
Yes, yes, yes. No, I've been reading lots of his stuff because he's a very interesting person. But yeah, his father, he had to read the Wall Street Journal every day.
Okay. I tried to do that myself once.
Which may be why his present play is called Junk, which is about junk bonds.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah.
Correct. There was a wonderful piece in Theater Talk. I've been meaning to talk about this forever. Sorry, non sequitur. Jesse Green, not so new anymore, but critic for the New York Times, is one of the co-hosts on Theater Talk now that Michael Rita left. And so I've seen him several times, but he so does not look like what I imagined him to look like.
Uh-huh.
I just want to say that. He just totally doesn't look like that at all.
Younger, older, bigger, smaller?
A little older. I thought Jesse Green, I saw him as a 30-something, mm-hmm. Handsome, dashing, all-American guy. And so Jesse Green...
I want to know that Jesse Green.
Yeah, it's not this guy. So anyway, that's it. Here's something I'm very excited about. I may travel to New York to see it. A Yiddish language Fiddler on the Roof is coming.
I love that.
Yeah, so I think that would be so cool, because as we know, this is it's taken from Shalom Aleichem's work, mm-hmm. who is a Yiddish storyteller, story writer, story something. But Jerry Zaks will be an advisor for this revival, as will Sheldon Harnick, who wrote the lyrics. So this will be done by Yiddish Theater. And I just think that I'm excited. I may have to go see it.
That's super cool. Speaking of Yiddish, I've started watching The Marvelous Miss Maisel.
Oh, my God.
Have you watched it?
Yes, I have.
I think it's so fun. I want to talk to Kim Simpson about this, because the Yiddish pop that they like, some of the uh-huh. score, I can't wait till they release an album or some. I can find
so
the music.
Do they use the klezmatics?
It's klezmer music. It's wonderful.
The klezmatics. You've never seen the klezmatics?
I have somewhere in my mind.
They're
but
amazing.
So the Marvelous Ms. Maisel is it's a network show, so it wouldn't necessarily be. They don't show specific. Performers.
Yeah, they don't show them, but it's
the music in the background.
I enjoy the heck out of it.
It's a wonderful, wonderful series, and I think that, oh God, what's his name? Plays her father.
Tony Shalhoub.
Tony Shalhoub, and the woman that plays his wife, her mother, is just phenomenal.
They're phenomenal, and I also love that
and
Amy Sherman-Palladino casts so many theater people. You've got Mary Testa, you've got Carolee Carmello, I love that they put in so many bit parts they cast in the theater. Makes me very happy. Anyway, I digress.
So I need to apologize to Nicole yesterday, or for last week. Speaking of Nicole. Yeah, I have to apologize to Nicole last week because she said, talked about the woman that played Louisa in Sound of Music passed away. And I said, you mean Liesel? And she said, yes, of course, Liesel. But no, it was Louisa.
See?
And I had to go back and watch the... I had to figure out which one was Louisa. Louisa was in the So Long, Farewell, Auf Wiedersehen, Goodbye. Mm-hmm. She was the one that I said, I flit, did the little ballet routine in it.
Yeah.
The blonde.
You know what? She's also the
She looks like this. Well, she looked like this last week.
Oh. She's also the one in the line when they all step forward. She's the one who goes, Louisa!
That's true. So last week...
How many times have you seen this movie?
I've seen it enough times. Yeah. But that was an easy one because they all did that. Liso! Brigitte! Brigitte's cute. So the fun story about Brigitte, who is the youngest, during the 25th anniversary, they told the story of... what's her name? Who starred in that? Julie Andrews said that she was in charge of, in the rowboat scene, Brigitte, the actress that played Brigitte, couldn't swim. So she was in charge of, as soon as it dumped over, she was in charge of grabbing that child so that she didn't die.
What?
I know. I have one last thing to talk about, and then we got to take a break because we, of course, went long as we always do.
But it was a good one.
Scott Rudin.
It makes me laugh.
Scott Rudin. You might remember him. He did a little play on Broadway starring Sally Fields called The Glass Menagerie.
The Glass Menagerie.
Right. Or as other people know it, Zuiloico de Cristal. The Glass Menagerie. Anyway, the rights to all of Tennessee Williams' plays are owned by...
The University of the South.
The University of the South. And they had a deal where the producer had to pay 6% of revenues before opening night, 7.5% after revenues for opening night. Guess how much Scott Rudin has paid them? Zero.
Yeah.
Zero. He owes them something like $385,000. And how... I don't know.
It didn't make...
It didn't do very well, but that's how much he's responsible for.
You know what?
Yes, but for those of us who've produced Tennessee Williams, trust me, you know, we want our royalties every night. The one
of
good
course.
Thing, what I always find it hilarious is that, you know, Tennessee Williams, homosexual playwright, University of the South, High Episcopal Church School on a mountain.
Yeah, interesting.
Anyways, but what I do think that's amazing that they've done with that is they have a heavy duty writers program, and I think an awful lot of the money for that writers program is funded by the royalties from Tennessee Williams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Lord knows, I mean, he's produced constantly.
Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely he is. All right. We're going to take a little break. I'm playing The Band's Visit. I'm going to play it twice because I've decided I am in love with Katrina Link. I'm in love with the music of The Band's Visit. So because I am, we're all forced to listen to it.
Let me tell you about Paidahti.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nick Mayo. Nick Mayo! So we have been talking to Norman Blumenstein, Shona Smith. I'm sorry. I'm now reading. And Derek Webster. And now we're going to switch gears and talk to the three of them about their show that is happening at different stages called We Are Married. Norman, tell us about this show.
When We Are Married.
Yes, that's true. You are correct. I was testing you.
That's a different phrase.
I was testing you.
Yeah, you were testing. Okay, all right. So this is a play by J.B. Priestley, and this is the third J.B. Priestley play that we've done. We did Dangerous Corner, and we did An Inspector Calls. After An Inspector Calls, this is comedy that takes place in Yorkshire. I'll probably mispronounce this. Cleckleywike.
Cleckleywike.
Yes, Cleckleywike.
Cleckleywike.
Yes,
I love that.
Which is his version of Bramford, in where he grew up in Yorkshire, and it's about three couples who are celebrating their 25th wedding anniversary, who find out that the minister who married them was not licensed to do so they have been living in sin for 25 years.
Scandalous. I'm going to ask you to move over to this microphone. Maybe you can hold it. So we have this one that works now. So
can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you now. It looks like it was this little cable that was the problem. Okay. So that's scandalous. So here, I want you to hold that thought. We're going to take a quick sidetrack. Shona, when we were, before we went on, I asked you to choose a number between 2 and 54, and there were some other rules along that. Do you remember what you chose?
I chose 9.
You chose 9. Let's see what that is. Here we go.
Hello there. This is John O'Hurley, Jay Peterman. You're listening to Lisa and Nicole offstage and on the air on KOOP, Hornsby, Austin.
Jay Peterman. That was before Nick Mayo's time.
And the role of Nicole will be played by
Nick Mayo. So this sounds like a fun show.
It is a fun show.
Okay, thanks for being on the show.
what more do you want me to say? It's a very funny play. It's a very funny play. And it has our gargantuan cast of 14.
That's big.
Yes, and we're performing at the Black Box Theater in Trinity Street on the fourth floor of the First Baptist Church in downtown Austin.
And when is this? When we were talking contemporary versus classic, I have to admit that I'm not familiar with this play.
Okay, so this play was written in the 30s, but the time period of the play is 1908. Priestley actually fought in World War I, and an awful lot of his writing and his plays deal with either England before or after World War I. So you need to think Downton Abbey before the actor who left, who's now in all the movies.
Peter Dinklage.
No. The person, the romantic lead who died in the car crash. Anyways, Dan Stevens. All that era that was sort of like right, the end of the Edwardian era, sort of 1908.
Well, that sounds awesome. So let's talk to Shona and Derek. Shona, what role do you play?
I play Ruby Birtle, who's a housemaid, and she's quite cheeky and doesn't really want to clean up after anyone. And
that sounds like me.
Wants to know everyone's business. Yeah.
Derek?
I play a drunk photographer. So it's been interesting practicing for this role.
I hope I assume you're a method actor and you had to really work it out, and you're drunk every night when you're at rehearsal.
No, I'm off alcohol, but it's an imaginative
trick.
Well,
you could be drunk on life, Derek.
Drunk, yes, but I think that exactly. Made you too good acting.
Norman, looks like you want to say something. We have pinned Norman in the most unnatural position. He cannot move.
I can't look at Lisa so that my mouth is right into
you. You are welcome to pull that microphone out of that stand and just hold it and do whatever you want.
Yeah, give us your best, like, Tina Turner micography.
Do I have to sing? No. That's okay. I will just leave it as is.
No, here, just yank it right out. Yank it out.
Okay.
There you go.
Oh, my.
Just hold that.
Okay.
There you go.
All right.
We show how the sausage is made here on offstage and on the air. And so we just like do everything right out in the front of and in the open.
So, you wanted me to say something.
I don't remember what we were talking about.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you want me to set up the scene that we're going to do?
That sounds great. So we're going to do a scene. Let's hear.
Okay. So. Obviously, neither Shona or Derek are any of the three couples who have found out that they're not married. We're going to do Derek's character, the photographer. He has been invited because these people are very pretentious and they think that they're the greatest thing in the world, even though they all still have this past of being very working class. And so they've invited the photographer to take another photo of them in the exact same positions for the wedding photo from 25 years ago.
Oh, excellent.
So he arrives quite inebriated, and this is where he comes in to set up the camera for the photograph.
Awesome. So this is a scene by Shona Smith and Derek Webster of Different Stages production of When We Are Married.
Nobody here. Nobody at all.
They'll all be back again soon. They're mostly in dining room. Fratchin?
What? On a festive occasion like this?
That's right.
Well, it just shows you what human nature is. Human nature. I bet if it had been a funeral, they'd have all been in here laughing their heads off. There isn't such a thing as a cigar here, is there?
Yes, you're looking at them. Do you want one? Here. My mother says if God had intended men to smoke, he'd have put chimneys in their heads.
Well, tell your mother, from me, that if God had intended men to wear collars, he'd have put collar studs at the back of their necks. What are you bobbing up and down like that for?
I'm not bobbing up and down, it's you. You're a bit tiddly, aren't you?
Tiddly?
Yes, squiffy.
What an extraordinary idea. You seem to me a most extraordinary sort of little... Well, I don't know, really. What's your name?
Ruby Birtle.
Ruby.
All right, I know it's a silly, daft name. You can't tell me now about Ruby. I haven't been told already, so don't try.
Ruby. I think you're quite extraordinary. How old are you?
15. How old are you?
Oh, thousands of years. Thousands and thousands of years.
You look to me about 70.
70? I'm 54.
Then you've been neglecting yourself. Too much lifting of the elbow.
Do you ever read the police news?
Yes, I like it. All horrible murders.
Then you must have seen them pictures of women who've been chopped up by their husbands.
Yes, with bloody hatchets.
Well, if you don't look out, Ruby, you'll grow up to be one of them women.
How do you mean, one of them women?
Oh, don't you bother about that, Ruby. You've plenty of time yet.
Time for what?
Now, what I'm going to do is take a flashlight group of the three couples just as they were in the old photograph. Now, let me see.
Here, do you mean I've plenty of time yet to grow up and then be chopped up?
Yes.
Oh, what fun.
Wow.
What fun. I love the turns of phrases.
I do too. Yeah. I do too.
What were some of the things you called him when he was drunk? Instead of being drunk, he was...
You're a bit tiddly, aren't
tiddly.
You?
Tiddly.
And squiffy.
Squiffy.
And squiffy. I like to think you're both tiddly and squiffy. You're a tiddly squiff.
How has it been working on this project? Have you enjoyed the process?
Absolutely. It's been really fun. And I think the accent and the words themselves have been the best part. Mm-hmm. I always love learning a new accent. I think it really helps develop the character by itself.
Yeah, you do it quite well. And you do
thank
it quite
you.
Well.
What about
and
you?
The language, it's nice to have an experience with language that isn't common everyday mm-hmm. language. It has yes. a kind of zip to it.
So what's funny for us Americans here, Derek, you have a South African accent, naturally.
Yeah.
And Shona, you have an Irish accent.
Scottish.
Scottish, that's what I meant to say.
It's okay.
We went through that before. It's
yeah,
okay.
It's right.
We should have notified that. It's okay. But it's interesting, for my part, it's like even though we are used to our American actors putting on accents,
yeah.
but suddenly when you guys put on completely different accents from your own, I'm impressed.
Yes, I know. I feel the same thing.
That's awful.
And
yeah.
also the way I have to give you guys, it's so fun to watch you play off of each other.
Yeah.
You really are, it seems, in the studio having such a good time playing off
each other. It seems like a really fun show in general.
Yeah.
So is this, I'm assuming, suitable for all ages?
Yeah, it is. What people ask me that question. The first Shaw play we did, Candida, which is a Tempest in a
yep.
teapot play about the minister's wife, everyone thinking that she's fallen in love with the young guy. I had people call me and go, "Is this suitable for children?" And I thought, well, you know, no one
it's
takes their
Shaw,
clothes off.
Yeah,
yes, yeah. You'll be talked to death before yeah. you'll be, you know.
Well, we're looking forward. When do you open the show?
January 12th.
January 12th, and it plays through when?
Now, this is important information. It plays through February 2nd, which is a Friday, not a Saturday. And that's
there
because I screwed up the contract.
Okay. Well, there you go. Norman screwed up the contract, and you get a February 2nd. So we have a Friday end, which is a good... I'm going to say that's a good thing. I don't know why, but I'm just going to say that. Where can folks go to get information?
They can go to differentstagestheater.org, theater spelled the French way.
The correct way.
Yes.
Well, great. Well, thank you guys for coming on. I know that all of you have things to do and can't join us backstage. So maybe next time you come in, you can join us backstage, and
cool.
we'd love to have you.
We'd love to do
thanks
that.
A lot.
Thank you so
awesome.
Much.
Thank you.
That was Norman Blumensaat, Shona Smith, and Derek Webster, all of Different Stages, production of When We Were Married by J.B. Priestley. J.R. Priestley.
When
it says,
we are
when
married.
When we are married.
Not were.
Oh my God!
No,
and it
right,
says,
you're right, you're
and
right.
it says, when we are married. I just didn't say it. When We Are Married by J.B. Priestley, January 12th through February 2nd at Trinity Street Theater. For more information, differentstagestheater.org. And you know, the whole show is just a scandal.
Oh my God!
Oh my God! That's so much fun. I cannot wait to see it.
Me too. That was a lot of fun. They were fantastic.
It'll be great. So we're running right into we're running a little late. So I just want to talk about some of the stuff that's going on this week. I wanted to reiterate what we talked about last week at Ground Floor Theater is the Voices of Danny mm-hmm. Hathaway, and that happens on January I believe 12th and 13th.
Mm-hmm.
Danny Hathaway was a performer who unfortunately committed suicide. Oddly enough, on January, I think, 14th, and this supposes what his last set would be. So it's a show with music about his last days on the earth. And I forgot to print this out, but the city of Austin is offering a course for artists on how to be a business person.
I saw this.
And I meant to bring the information to tell people, but basically if you go into Now Playing Austin, it's showing up in the first line of things under theater.
I saw this as well.
And I don't know. I'm conflicted.
You know what, Lisa? We should find out more about it.
We should talk about it again next week.
We should be sleuths and find out what's going on. Figure out what's going on. We should go undercover as artists who want to learn about business. We can put on mustaches and funny glasses and find out what it's... We can enroll and come back and tell everyone about it.
We should. I should say also that we've been joined here by Laura Toner Haddock and Cindy Williams. Hi, you guys.
Hello. Good. How are you?
I'm excellent. Any better than I would be twins.
You guys appeared out of nowhere in a flash.
That's Jinx, what we do. Yeah. It's our preferred mode
of
appearance.
Let's jump right into today in theater history so we have plenty of time to talk to Cindy and Laura. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Back in 1909, it is the birthday of somebody named Victor Borga.
Oh, Victor Borga.
Have you ever seen him?
Mm-mm.
Have you seen videotape of him?
Yes.
He's funny. So he does a comedy and music. He did have an 888 performance run on Broadway called Comedy and Music.
Aw.
Dun, ta, dun, 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 dun. Let's see. 1944, Ruth Gordon wrote and starred in an autobiographical play. I did not know this.
I didn't know that either.
It's called Over 21, and it was at the Music Box Theater, which is my favorite Broadway theater from the outside.
Mine, too, from the outside.
It's so adorable. It's
so
like a little
cute.
Music box.
It's so cute.
I would want to own that theater.
I know. I love going. I love walking into that theater.
Yeah, so I would call it, I'd call it Lisa Shep's Music Box Theater. I don't know. I just came up with that name.
I like it.
Right there. 1952. There's a revival of Pal Joey.
Oh.
Rodgers and Hart. It starred Helen Gallagher, Harold Lane, Elaine Stritch, recreating the original. And Vivian Siegel, who was in the original. And it was... Harold Lang was replaced by his understudy, Mr. Bob Fosse.
Interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
Show tends to have that. The last revival they did with Stocker Channing, the young man who played the lead stepped in as the understudy.
Well, that was Bob Fosse's first Broadway lead.
Hmm. That's crazy.
Yeah, can you? It's hard to think of that.
I love that.
1962. I'm 4 years old when this happened. Brecht on Brecht open. In the thing, it says, more precisely, George Tabori on Brecht, who translated and adapted a sample of Brecht's prose, poetry, and songs. It starred Lotta Lenya, who is like, if Brecht has got Lotta Lenya in it, Vivica Lindfors, Dana Clark, and Anne Jackson. There are among the cast for 424 performances at Theatre Delice. For extra credit, what is that theater called now? And just to give you a hint, I've asked this question before.
I know you haven't. I forgot.
It is the Lucille Lortel.
Oh.
And to keep things full circle, Theatre Delice is where Cloud 9 was.
Hey,
see there? We're, Nicole would be very happy about that. Just cracking myself up. In 2011, Jill Hayworth, who created the role of Sally Bowles in Cabaret, died. And guess how many Broadway shows she did?
17.
No, just that one. It was her only Broadway show.
Oh.
So that was her only Broadway show.
Oh.
So that will, that's what people will say about me when I die. Lisa Shep's played the camel's ass on Broadway.
It
was her only Broadway show. It's very sad. It is the birthday of Zazu Pitts.
Oh, Zazu.
I just like saying that. Marianne Wong,
she's not right.
Thank you. That's where I was going to go.
I'm sorry.
Jesse White, 1917. And then it's also local birthday of Mr. James Chapman. Happy birthday, James, and a shout out. And Bridget Farias Gates.
Hey, that's exciting.
Yay!
Happy birthday to all.
And one shout out just real quick. The Capital City Players production of Cloud 9 from 1988 are having a reunion right now. So all you cast members from 1988 who are sitting in Hyde Park eating those fries.
So we know that Michael Hartman, was in it. What role did he play?
He played the guy who has blonde hair and is young, and he made me understand that. He said, "Nick, I won awards for it. Oh my gosh. What is the equivalent now of the Austin's Critic Table back then? He was 20 something." Yeah. So.
And who else was in it? Do you know?
I don't know, but okay. From the way he describes it, it was a wonderful cast, and they're all sitting together having a little
who
reunion.
Who directed it? Do you know that?
I don't know anything. Okay.
Well, we will ask Michael Hartman because he will be on the show next week. Next week, this will be just a little preview. We're going to be doing a roundtable, one of our famous roundtables, where we talk about PR and marketing for theater. Mm-hmm. And Michael Hartman, who is/was... I don't know whether present or past tense would be the right thing, but he was, if there was a big Broadway show happening in the past 15 years, his name was up there at the top.
It was.
Yeah. So
it'll be exciting to talk to him.
Very exciting to talk to him. We'll have a little bit of a royalty here in the theater. Before we go away from local stuff, other than the show that we're here to talk to you guys about, Laura and Cindy, is there anything locally that you want to discuss? Throw out there? Anything?
Like other productions going on?
Yeah. Nope. Okay.
No.
Good. With just whatever's playing at Austin Playhouse. Yeah, that's the only thing we care about. So, okay, we'll take a little break. We're going to go out with the little pal, Joey.
Oh,
okay, pal?
Okay, pal.
If my heart gets in your hair.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Shipps and Nick Mayo.
Hello.
And sometimes we have Nicole Shiro.
She's loving that.
She is. We have been talking to, in the last few minutes, Laura Tonar Haddock and Cindy Williams. And we're going to now switch and speak specifically to them about a show I am so excited to see.
Lisa, before we do that, do you mind talking about what's happening at Ground Floor Theater?
Oh, don't. Please. Stop.
No, please.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this Friday, mm-hmm. 3 days from now, don't make me do math. This Friday from 5 to 7 is a meet and greet party, sort of celebrating the reopening of Ground Floor Theater, a very much needed venue space for theater here. It is open to the public, and everybody is invited to attend. 5 to 7, we'll have some interesting announcements, and we will have some. We'll hear a little piece of the Danny Hathaway show they're going to perform for us as well.
So and I just want to offer, if anyone comes and sees me there, if you're listening, you can pull me aside, and I will tell you more about Ground Floor Theater, or I will sing a Rodgers and Hammerstein ballad in your ear.
And I will sing Lawrence and Hart.
Yes.
In your other ear. As a counterpoint.
So I will be there holding a glass of white wine. Find me, and I will tell you all about Ground Floor Theater and sing you a ballad.
There you go. The Immigrant. Tell us about this play.
Okay, so this is a play that my dad, Don Toner, actually directed almost 30 years ago in town, and then we remounted it, and this was back when he was running Live Oak Theater. And it starred Babs George and Tom Parker. Tom Parker was the immigrant. It's the story, it's the true story of this young Russian Jewish couple who immigrates to the port of Galveston back in 1909. And it's just beautiful. It's one of my favorite plays. I've been wanting us to do it again for ages. Cindy Williams and Huck Huckabee are in our current cast, along with Joseph Garlock and Estrella Saldana. Joseph Garlock plays Haskell Harlick.
Wow, you did that so well.
I need to say that she is doing this without notes.
I know. You're just so good.
So it's 1909 in Galveston, the same year that Victor Borge was born, as we mentioned earlier.
Which is why you did...
Absolutely. It's all coming down to this moment.
Keeping it timely.
And Haskell arrives with nothing and meets in the tiny town of Hamilton, Texas, is where he ends up.
Like the musical?
Exactly.
Keeping it timely.
They named the musical after this town.
Right. There actually, a fun side point, there is a musical version of The Immigrant that Mark Harlick wrote later. Yes. So a lot of people have been calling and asking us which one we're doing, but we are doing
the non-musical version.
Right. And so you have this couple, an established banker and his wife, and Haskell kind of happens upon them, and they take him in a little bit, and it's this clash of cultures, but this beautiful story of understanding and people learning to accept the differences, then there's, of course, some discrimination, and there's tons of humor, and it's just a beautiful story, and I love it. And it has no business being political, but it is in today's current climate.
Well, and it was then. So, I mean, if you go back to the turn of the century, the Ashkenazic Jews that came over at that time were a discriminated culture, even within the Jewish culture. So there was the first wave of Jewish immigration, which came from Germany. And then when the Ashkenazic Jews came in, the first wave of Jews moved in, they assimilated, and I'm using air quotes, into American, and the Ashkenazic Jews didn't. They came in and they brought their culture with us, which is what makes people mad even today with today's immigrants.
Right. And you really, as I mentioned, Mark Harlick is the playwright, and he wrote this about his grandparents and their story. So there are candlesticks used in the play that we may be using the actual candlesticks that were brought over.
Oh my God, I just got chills.
It's,
I wonder, I should actually contact him because, my great-grandparents came over and immigrated into Galveston.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Maybe they know each other.
Well, there was, people don't think about the port of Galveston being a major
hub. It was, though.
But it was. And so we've got a little program note explaining.
And of course we forget that, but how, other than the port of Galveston, did we get these German towns like Fredericksburg, New Braunfels, that they were settled truly by German immigrants coming through Galveston, finding their ways to these German communities?
And as they come in, as they come in and move their way to the Northeast, they can come visit Lisa Shep's Music Box Theater.
Well, and do their production of Rocky Das Musical.
Well, exactly.
And it's a real question for these Russian immigrants whether they go to find communities where there are more immigrants, whether they stay in this town where they're just them at that point.
Does it talk about how they found their way from the port of Galveston to this town of Hamilton?
I-35.
Right. That's pretty easy. No, not so much. We pick up in Hamilton with Haskell there. But I'd love for Cindy to
Cindy,
speak a little to her.
So tell us a little bit about the character you're playing and how you're approaching the role and your experience in this so far.
I'm a Perry. I play the banker's wife. I think, you always see the play from your character's point of view, of course. So I think it's a journey from fear of the other to actually kind of, well, finding that the other is not the other. And it's interesting to me as an actor, she's constantly saying things like, oh, well, that's just like this. Shabbos sounds just like Sabbath. There's hardly any difference between the two. She tries so hard to find these connections.
God bless your heart.
Yeah. But it's interesting. She's not a highly educated woman, despite the fact that she's married to the banker. She actually came from another state herself. So I think there's a bit of sympathy with the idea of being the new person in town, which, of course, in the early 1900s in Texas would have been quite a thing to overcome.
What I find wonderful in this, in how you're describing the piece and how we see things like the band's visit, and come from a way where if we just take some time to talk to the people that are different from us, that perhaps scare us or make us, quote, angry, we might learn that they are humans just like us. And
what?
That sounds like what you're saying.
Yeah, one of my favorite things.
It's true, Laura.
One of my favorite things in the play is that initially Haskell doesn't speak English. He knows a few words, but he speaks Yiddish.
Right.
And so my character and his character have a huge desire to communicate with each other and how you communicate without having the same words. So I just love that aspect of
this. One of my favorite things about doing what we do is when you're working on a piece and all of a sudden you start to look at the world in a different way. Mm-hmm. How has this piece opened your eyes in your daily life? Are you seeing different things in your daily life because of this piece?
It makes me want to see different things in my daily life. Uh-huh. Politically, we're in such a precarious time. Mm-hmm. And so the play really has made me, I guess what I would say is I'm seeking out the kindnesses and the connections, the small things that happen between people to remind myself personally that I do believe that we're really good at heart for the most part.
What a great answer. What a great answer. And what a challenging piece. What a challenging piece to be doing now.
It is.
For that very reason.
It is.
So we really only have time for one more question, but I'm curious. So Don Toner, the executive, the artistic founder.
Producing artistic director of Austin Playhouse. So you were talking about theater anniversaries earlier in the show. We actually, my family moved here 30 years ago in January. So we are, so this, the Immigrant was one of the first plays he produced, I think, in his second season, and we are having a big party on Tuesday night to celebrate this 30th anniversary in Austin.
Where's that party taking place?
At the Zilker Clubhouse. So it's got the best view of Austin, so we can point out the 17 different places he's produced theater in town. I'm not kidding. We have a map.
Oh my. Super. Is there a place where folks can get more information about that?
Absolutely. Our website, of course, austinplayhouse.com.
Awesome. And Don is just an icon of theater here in Austin, at least for the past 30 years. He directed The Immigrant originally, and he directed this again. I know that he's not here, and if you can answer in just like a minute, is he coming from a different place this time?
I think so. I think probably he has a little more sympathy with Ima and Milton than he did the
first
time.
You mean Don Toner has grown a little bit?
There's a possibility in 30 years.
Awesome. So when do you open?
We open on Friday.
So
after the ground floor theater party.
Right after. So they could see. They could do both.
They could absolutely. There's your night.
What time is your curtain?
8 o'clock.
Absolutely.
There you can do both.
There you go. And how long do you play?
We run through January 28th.
Awesome. So. Where can folks go to get more information?
Our website, austinplayhouse.com.
Okay. Awesome. So that was Laura Toner and Cindy Williams of Austin Playhouse's production of The Immigrant by Mark Herlich, I have the wrong dates here. Give us the dates again.
January 5th through the 28th.
Okay, for more information, austinplayhouse.com. We will be right back. All right, that is from Rags.
I love Rags.
Another Immigrant play.
I want to talk to you about Rags. I think we should do Rags.
I would love to. We'll talk about it. And Larry Kurt was in that. Mm-hmm. I love me some Larry Kurt. So we are a plum out of time. Thank you again
Thank
for another
you.
Lovely day.
I've missed you terribly. I miss you terribly.
Just 1 week.
I look forward to seeing you on Friday at the Ground Floor Theater.
Awesome. Remember, do all the stuff, like Facebook. You can go to offstageonair.com, sign up to get the show right in your mailbox. And because I'm just in love with the band's visit and Katrina Link, and so is Nicole Shiro.
you had to get one more in.
I had to get one more in. I promise that's done. We'll go out with listening to a little bit of the band's visit.
I was romantic and young and stupid.